From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It's a building of a majority to get to 60. I think we're doing our very best to get that majority. I think my philosophy in life is hope for the best and work for it.
All right, you all know that the governor appeared before our caucus on Monday. Made an impassioned plea for his proposal to extend the increase in the income tax. Today, we took a vote in the House Democratic Caucus. There were 34 members of the caucus voting yes. There were a little over 30 voting no.
There's still time to help me fight Pat Quinn's tax increase and to let State Representative Deb Conroy know you want her to protect you from higher income taxes.
Bring us an idea. You know, I would love to have the Republicans say, here's a plan B that we came up with. Let's have a conversation. But so far, we haven't seen that.
It's my understanding that the minority also gets paper on which they can print a budget and introduce it into this body.
This is a typical end of the year misdirection, trying to extract some leverage on some other individuals in state government. I think I know what's going on, but I do think that this is not a very sincere effort that's going on. There is a plan that is in place. At the end of the day, they'll get their 60 votes at some point.
And those are some of the voices around the Illinois State Capitol this week as they have questions of taxing and spending at the Illinois State Capitol. And the number 60 is relevant because that's how many votes something takes to pass the Illinois House. Well, this week it was announced there were not enough votes for keeping the tax increase out there. Yet, when it came to an austerity budget, it went down in flames. Late session fun with the spending plan on this week's State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey, WUIS and Illinois Public Radio State House reporter, and our guest this week, Sarah Burnett of the Associated Press. Sarah, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Well, both Sarah and Brian Mackey, you were there on Friday morning when lawmakers decided to take a shot at an austerity budget as part of the political symbolism or whatever it is taking place at the state capitol. And only a handful of votes said they could support, or a handful of lawmakers, I should say, could say they supported a budget of about $34.5 billion. And so it didn't fare well.
That's right. There were five all Democrats who voted yes on it, which is almost as bad as you can get. And, you know, the interesting thing was it was over pretty quickly. There was very little debate. And afterward, Representative Tom Cross, a Republican, said to us this was all just a bunch of political theater, which I don't think there are many people who would disagree with that. It was intended to show the members what they would be voting for if they didn't vote for a tax increase, and it was intended to try to make them change their minds about extending the temporary income tax.
And as we head into a Memorial Day weekend, we stand right now. Democrats had said earlier they don't have enough votes to support the income tax increase or keeping the tax increase in place. Yet this fell down in flames, as I mentioned. So what does this all mean at this point? Was it, you said, very few people disagree it was political theater. For those who aren't living their lives inside the state capitol, maybe you can elaborate a bit.
Well, I think you have to look at the theater that's happened throughout the entire week, right? You go back to Monday, and Governor Pat Quinn comes and speaks to the House Democratic Caucus. This is a closed-door meeting. He's in there for well more than 2.5 hours. We're told that the speaker described to us that he would grow animated sometimes when he wasn't hearing what he wanted to hear. I've also heard that there were as many as 52 Democrats who were willing to vote yes on a tax extension at one point this week. And then you fast forward a little bit, the governor meets with individual lawmakers. The speaker meets with individual lawmakers. On Wednesday, we heard the speaker held another closed-door meeting of House Democrats. This one went a heck of a lot faster. And then he came out and told reporters that he only had 34 people willing to vote for the tax increase. Now, that was not a real vote. You know, there's no – it was secret within the caucus, at least. It, you know, you're not actually committing to something that's going to be on the record on the floor of the House the way you would if you were voting on real legislation. But that does – I mean, the consensus seems to be it was intended to send a message that the Speaker just – you know, that whoever – be it the governor, be it the Speaker, whoever is trying to convince people to go along with this higher tax rate to – or I should say to make permanent the higher tax rate, that the votes just aren't there. So, I mean, all week has seems to have been one theater production after another, and where it's leading, I don't know. Are we in the second act yet? I think maybe now we're just getting into the second act, right? Because the second act's always kind of the dark period where you don't really know the hero faces the struggle. And so we'll just have to see what happens over the weekend.
Well, I look at it that it's an exercise in last week it was, if we extend the taxes at their current levels, here are the things that we can fund. And that was the 72 bills that were passed last week and then put on hold when the Speaker filed a motion to reconsider the votes by which they passed. So they're kind of in limbo. Now we come back and at the end of this week, we do, here is the doomsday budget. This is all we can afford if we don't extend the current tax levels. And that got five votes. Now the members go home. They'll be home for 2 days, and there's an opportunity for the folks who would be direly impacted by this austerity budget to tell their lawmaker back in the home district, look, this is going to cripple our efforts to help the elderly. This is going to cause great distress for our schools. This is going to threaten the existence of the jobs at this state institution in your district, and give the, what would you say, the rank and file who are going to be impacted by these kinds of severe cuts the opportunity to speak with their lawmakers to try and convince them either to extend the current rates or find some other revenue source so that these kinds of deep cuts don't have to occur. And I suspect that if we didn't have roll call votes, everybody on record, if you put the extension of the tax increase to a secret ballot, you know, like you do when you go to vote for people at the polls, the thing would probably pass without much difficulty. Because I suspect there are a lot of Republicans in downstate districts where state facilities and state jobs are a mainstay of the economy, who really, maybe they're voting no on the roll call, but to use Mike Lawrence's old expression, they're praying yes that this stuff will pass.
Yeah, I had a state senator when Governor Quinn a couple of years ago proposed slashing, or I should say closing, prisons and some developmental centers and a bunch of other state facilities. This Democratic state senator was sort of speaking derisively of downstate so-called fiscal conservatives, because he says they talk a great game about being fiscal conservatives until you want to close something in their district, then suddenly they're New Deal Democrats. And you're right. Nobody wants to have that happen in their district. I thought Greg Harris had a state representative, Greg Harris, who is chairman of the House Human Services Appropriations Committee. I thought he had a really neat way to phrase this, which is, you know, everybody around here says it's a very difficult vote to extend the income tax increase. But is it any less difficult to vote to end Meals on Wheels for seniors, to slash funding for nursing homes, to potentially close prisons, lay off teachers? And I think we saw this morning that perhaps that is an even more difficult vote to make those cuts.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Sarah, I'm one who kind of looks at this and says, well, I have a feeling, I'm not down there, but I have a feeling at the state capitol, House Speaker Michael Madigan's not really forcing his members too hard on the issue right now. It seems pretty casual. Well, this is how many are against it, but there's nothing out there for a voter or for one of these lawmakers to vote for it. In some instances, no real arm twisting or trading has had to take place.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, the thing you always hear about Speaker Madigan is that if he wants to get something done, he can get it done. And he's talked a lot about what, you know, feeling that the tax increase is important and that he personally really wants it, or the tax extension. However, you know, after today's vote, his comment was that they were going to go back and they were going to draft another budget that did not rely on keeping that permanent. So whether we're going to go through this again or whether he truly is, you know, letting his members off the hook, we'll see as time plays out. But we also have to remember he is also the chairman of the Illinois Democratic Party, and he has to get members reelected, and it's an election year, and one of the reasons why some of these lawmakers are so hesitant is because they're in tough reelection races in November. So, you know, that certainly is a factor here.
Well, and we heard at the top of the show, when I was cutting the audio for that, I mixed in some Bruce Rauner. He had robocalls in a dozen House and Senate districts, mostly these sort of freshman targeted lawmakers who are a lot of them have committed. They made either campaign promises or they signed on to legislation to completely repeal the income tax of a few years ago. And Bruce Rauner has a ton of money to spend. And he is not just necessary. I mean, he has shown in the primary that he's not only going to be spending money on his own campaign, but potentially could spend it to try and win some allies in the legislature this fall. And so I think that is another factor. But on the other hand, Bruce Rauner has not come out with any sort of budget plan on his own. And that has been, I think, a fair criticism that, you know, Republicans, one of the reasons the Republicans say they didn't vote for the budget that went through Friday morning, this austerity budget or the not recommended budget, as the governor is calling it, is that they say this is kind of a sham process. Again, that theater we were talking about. But they have not come out with their own plan. They have appropriation staffs. We heard Christian Mitchell making a joke there. You guys get paper, right? You can print out your own version of a budget if you want to. And neither of the House Republicans or the Senate Republicans nor their gubernatorial nominee, Bruce Rauner, has come out with any plan of their own that would, you know, spell out how the state of Illinois could continue to fund things without making massive cuts, but, you know, also let the tax increase roll back as scheduled at the end of the year.
And I think the reason that they don't is because there is no way that you can do that. You're going to have pain one way or the other. You're either going to have to make severe cuts or you're going to have to keep the income tax rates where they are now. Either way, it's going to be controversial. It's going to anger people. And you can say, well, we're the minority. It's the Democrats' problem. Whatever they do, we'll criticize. They're going the wrong way, but we don't really have to offer any viable alternative because we're just playing the politics game. And I particularly fault the gubernatorial candidate, Mr. Rauner. He's known he's going to be running for governor for well more than a year, and you would think someone who was running for governor would take a look and assess what the financial status of the state was, particularly someone who touts what a great businessman he is, and he would have some ideas. I think he owes it to the public, to the voters, to tell what those ideas are, not to have the secret plan tucked in his pocket that he'll unveil at some point in the future. By now, he should know what he's going to do. I mean, it's not the laying out what the options are is really not that difficult. But having to man up and say, these are the ones that I'm going to follow, that's the hard part, because that way you can't be all things to all people.
You know, and I do think that one of the – this is something that sticks in the craw of some Democrats is that we're going to – you know, let's whatever you think of Bruce Rauner and Pat Quinn, it is going to be a competitive campaign. You know, Illinois has – tended to vote for Democratic gubernatorial candidates in recent years, but Bruce Rauner has a lot of money to spend, and that's very important in politics. And so people think, you know, that he has certainly a decent shot at winning. And if that's the case, and he's going to just beat people up over the tax increase, if I'm a low-level Democrat, why should I give him this gift? If he thinks he can balance the budget, let him figure it out. And so I think that some people maybe would want to, you know, try and do either a short-term tax extension like that, but I mean, this is more speculative at this point, and I haven't heard anything official that's any sort of direction they're heading. But I think that people look at this and say, why should we? You know, if Bruce Rauner thinks he can get this done, well, let's let him figure it out next year.
So why take a tough vote in favor of extending a tax increase, or so that he can
Yeah, so that he'll run a state into with office. And, yeah.
I would argue that that's just crass politics, because the fact of the matter is you have to fund state government starting July 1st. We can't put state government on hold and say, well, we're not going to do anything. We're going to wait and see who wins the governor's race. I mean, at some point, you have to divorce yourself from politics and actually behave like, perish the thought, statesmen and stateswomen, and say, we were elected to deal with these tough issues. Here's a public policy question that has to be addressed, and we may just have to put politics aside and work together to find the best possible solution under the circumstances. And
well, surely, Charlie, you're not maintaining that
the
Democrats
are doing
it, though.
I sound like a policy wonk and all that.
I know, but you're not maintaining that's what the Democrats are doing right now.
I'm saying they're doing more of it than the Republicans, because they put options out there, and the game is still going on.
And, Sarah, refresh me again. Just characterize what the speaker's comments were following that Friday morning vote. You mentioned them a few minutes ago.
Yeah. He basically said that they're going to go back and they're going to try again to draft a budget that does not rely on keeping the 5% tax increase in place, and that, you know, doesn't cut stuff to the extreme levels that, you know, resulted in a vote this morning that only five people were willing to support. So, you know, how they do that is we will see. I mean, the other thing we have to remember here is that this also still has to pass the Senate once the House gets done with it.
Right, and there's no way the Senate would. I mean, if it only got five votes in the House, I don't know if you can have a situation where something gets negative votes. But
right.
I mean, it has no chance. This that budget that passed the House this morning would be, you know, would barely get through the door in the Senate. So, I mean, that's a great consideration. The Senate has largely been left out of our conversation so far, because Senate President Cullerton has made it clear that he wants the House. After voting for tax increases and things like that in the past, you know, he's kind of Charlie Brown. Lucy, who is the House Speaker, tees up that football, and then he goes to kick, and the football gets pulled away. So the Senate President Cullerton has made it clear he wants the House to act first on these budget questions this year. But yeah, that is a great point, Sarah, that they are still going to have to pass this too.
And there are things they could do. I mean, Senator Katowski, who's one of the chief negotiators in the Senate, is talking again about corporate tax loopholes. I mean, we have seen, Charlie, you saw years and years of budgets in which they don't make the pension payment, or they don't pay their bills, or things like that. We have seen creative budgeting in the past.
And that's true. If they decided, for example, okay, we're not going to make the pension payment this time around.
That is nothing we've heard. I just know many people.
Correct.
But I'm saying that. So, yeah.
That would save us in the neighborhood of $6 billion. But on the other hand, there are some things that are just so, what would you say, so unconscionable and such absolute, incredible, bad public policy, I don't think they're part of the discussion. You know, what would happen to our bond rating if we suddenly decided we're not going to make a pension payment?
Yeah.
I mean, we got the lowest bond rating, or near the lowest bond rating of any state in the union
well,
now.
New Jersey, Governor Chris Christie's trying that in New Jersey this year. We can see what happens there. And we know what happened in the past here with Governor Blagojevich doing that. Well, some of the things we have heard, we saw some sudden movement on a sugary soda tax, I mean, this week. And, these are all just kind of things that are floating out there. Nothing is anywhere close to being soup, as they say, to being a done deal. But, there's a tax on sugary soda. In years past, they tried to pass a tax on satellite providers, something the cable industry wants, that they say would, help them be more competitive with satellite TV companies. But, I mean, you're right. There are a lot of other options for revenue that could be done if they decide to go that way.
And we'll talk about some of those other issues just ahead on State Week.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and the Associated Press's Sarah Burnett. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. One of the issues that also was floated this week, at least in discussion, is talk of statewide building projects, a program, they always call it the Capitol Bill. Is that something that might be floated in all of this and possibly used to bring on people to support the tax once it they can demonstrate some back home projects?
Yeah, this is something that has been talked about for a while. The latest version of this plan would take the sales tax on gasoline, so not the the gas tax, but the actual just the six and a quarter percent sales tax on gasoline and dedicate that. It's about $750 to $800 million a year, and it would dedicate it to bridges, roads, and be a sort of annual consistent replenishing program. Unlike, you know, for the last couple of decades, we've had Illinois First, Illinois Jobs Now, these kind of big one-off programs that they get spent down, and then a couple of years later, you got to go redo it. The idea here is to have a more consistent program, although the sponsor, State Representative Elaine Neckritz, a Democrat from Northbrook, she said that she doesn't think this will go unless the tax extension happens, because if you are looking at making big cuts in state government, trying to lay a claim on another $750 or $800 million is not going to be a really realistic possibility. On the other hand, you have these road projects, and that's something that everybody likes to, if you're a politician, you love cutting ribbons. And so that could be a carrot to try and get people to vote for a tax extension.
One of the difficulties with our transportation funding is that, as you said, the sales tax on gasoline goes into the general funds for state purposes, you know, education, healthcare, human services, and so on. The gas tax is a flat 19 cents, I believe it is, per gallon. And so it doesn't matter if you're buying gas at $2 a gallon or $5 a gallon. It's 19 cents. And because it's flat and because of the better fuel economy that the automotive fleet is getting these days, the revenues have been pretty stagnant. On the other hand, the costs of road construction for labor and materials have increased steadily, so that 19 cents goes a lot less far today than it did when it was last raised, which I believe was back probably 20 years ago.
Which is why your fuel-efficient hybrids are rumbling over potholes and driving over rusty bridges.
Yeah.
Other, you mentioned the sugar tax. I'll let you talk about that just a bit more, Brian, although not expected really to go anywhere as we hear right now.
Yeah, right now, but you know, things are changing by the hour around
right,
here,
right.
So you never know. They are taking the weekend off, but next week it's a new week. So this would just, the idea here, this was actually brought up by health advocates, and it's, you know, the idea is to maybe you'd reduce obesity, tooth problems, things like that. It could bring in as much as $600 million in revenue. I can't remember, I don't know if you remember, Sarah, what the actual amount of that, I think it was like a penny per ounce or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but yeah, the idea here is you raise a lot of money, you drive up the price of sodas, and, you know, hope the ideal for the advocates would be that you get people drinking fewer of these sugary beverages. Of course, you have a lot of lawmakers, once again, just like everything else, who have a lot of people who work in this industry at bottling plants and things like that. So it's never a clear-cut thing one way or the other.
Another issue we have seen on Friday, the Illinois House passed a renewed effort to put a non-binding referendum on the ballot that would ask folks what they think of a tax on the millionaires. What do we have there?
If you recall, this idea was originally proposed by Speaker Madigan. I don't know, Brian, was it minutes or hours after Bruce Rauner, himself a multimillionaire, won the Republican primary? I guess he gave him a couple hours, maybe.
Yeah.
It originally was going to be a tax imposed on incomes of $1 million or more. And that effort was abandoned when it became clear that he didn't have the support for that, but it came back this week, as you said.
And that,
in the
that would have been
a
constitutional amendment.
Correct.
It would have had to go to voters, and you need to super majorities to get it out of the House and Senate. With the money going towards education in that original proposal, it would be something, I think it would be a 3% on any income over $1 million, and it would be go directly to schools based on their number of students. So not through the typical state funding formulas that look at poverty, concentration, all these other things, or rather don't. But anyway, that plan, as you said, was dead, and so he came back with this.
Yeah, so it's basically just going to ask voters if they would like to do this. And of course, the thought on this being that this is another way to drive voters, primarily Democrats, to go to the polls in November when Democrats are quite worried about an off-year election and turnout, and they need as many of their base to go to the polls as possible.
And this is the second one of these the speaker has done. He also wants voters to weigh in on whether Illinois ought to make its minimum wage $10 an hour.
We're eventually just going to have a ballot every year asking people what they think about issues, and then maybe the legislature will act later, I guess.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I was trying to figure out the last time one of these things actually happened, and the speaker wasn't even entirely sure. I think it was about a week ago when he did the minimum wage one. He said that there was a referendum on whether state mandates should be eliminated or barred in the Constitution, which is the idea that you force local governments to spend money on things but don't actually reimburse them or pay them for doing so. And as far as I can tell, and Charlie, maybe you can speak to this, but that won, and yet it is not actually something that's prohibited in the Constitution. So just because voters weigh in and say, yes, something should happen, does not make it a done deal either.
Not at all.
We'll get in some notes from the field in the remaining 2 minutes. Charlie Wheeler.
One of the things that the state Senate did this past week was to endorse a proposed amendment to the U.S. Constitution guaranteeing that equality of rights under law shall not be denied or abridged on the basis of sex, the so-called Equal Rights Amendment. And this is revisiting an issue that was kind of laid to rest back in 1982 when Illinois refused to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment that had been proposed, and Illinois was one of, I think, 15 states that didn't, and as a result, that amendment is not part of the federal Constitution. The interesting thing, though, that people maybe don't recall is that our very own state Constitution, in its Bill of Rights, has a section that says equal protection of the law shall not be denied or abridged on account of sex by the state or its units of local government and school districts. And at the time the Constitution was written, that language was not very controversial at all. It got very little attention, and the voters of the state of Illinois ratified the proposed new Constitution in 1970, including that language. So in a sense, what the Senate did this week is only mirroring what Illinois voters did back in 1970.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Sarah Burnett for joining us as our guest today. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.